clerk will call the doctor.
Portsmouth 2175 Elmer LLC against City of Portsmouth et al. Barry Randolph, Coach Thomas, Kendall Snyder, Steve Collins, James Arthur Taylor, the third, the athlete.
Good morning. May it please the court. I'm Barry Randolph Koch, and with me is my co-counsel, Tom Snyder, and we represent Portsmouth 2175 before you today. This is an action to challenge 3 years of city tax assessments pursuant to 58.13984 to the old Smithfield Packing Plant property in Portsmouth. It's 44 years old at the time that this case was heard. Quite frankly, the issues in this case, I think we covered in great detail in both the brief and the reply brief, and I'm not going to just go through that. And obviously, I'm here to answer any questions that you might have.
Well, let's start with that then.
Yes, sir.
The localities do mass appraisals, right, when they're looking at this type of taxation. What was the flaw, and in fact the standards of appraisal contemplate there's differences between mass appraisals and garden variety appraisals. From your perspective, what was the flaw in the way the property was appraised under mass appraisal standards as opposed to different standards?
Well, the problem with the mass appraisal method in general is that it's designed to give an average, and that's utilized for properties until someone raises the issue. And when the issue is raised by a taxpayer that the mass appraisal that's been utilized to look at all the properties, it was wrong as to a single property, that's when the tax assessor is required to start looking at the three different methods as to how something is valued.
And is there a specific standard that's violated if they don't do that?
Well, as Ms. Dove testified, and in fact, our appraiser as well that did the large appraisal testified, there's standards of the appraisal world.
Right, and so what I was trying to get at, because in your corner you have the fact that a lot of times we're trying to extrapolate what fair market value is. And you have two sales of the property that appear to be arm's length that are for far less than what it was appraised for. So that's something that's in your corner. But on the other hand, you know, we've generally said you have to identify a methodological flaw or some way it was done incorrectly. We're just not going to let everybody come in, just challenge everything, have a battle of experts. That to get in the gate, so to speak, you have to identify flaws with the way it was done. For example, in our McKee case, it was a sort of unique, bizarre way of doing things. So that's what I'm trying to figure out is if the mass appraisal was done in some incorrect way, that's point number one. And point number two, does that matter? Can you pass go, even though the mass appraisal may have been done correctly, but then you still get into this battle of experts because once you challenge it, they're required to do a deeper dive.
That's correct. In fact, Mr. Okay. Butt said he drilled down. And when he drilled down, he found out that the property was half what it should have been assessed at. That's where they came up with the $3 million plus when he drilled down. Well, the whole idea about the look back for 3 years is when you drill down, well, let's look back for those 3 years and give you a chance to show in at least one of those years that when you do the drill down that the mass appraisal was wrong. And I think that's true. Now, in our particular case, we focused on the methodology. And the evidence is replete. And I love Judge Melvin. He's wonderful to go before. But after all, the city of Portsmouth is there worried about revenue at the same time, and this is a huge piece of property that they've lost, so to speak. But we think it was very clear, and our evidence from Ms. Dove and Mr. Coralito were that for a structure this old, 44 years old, with 15-foot, 18-foot ceilings, where in a warehouse facility in today's world, you want 20, 24 feet, that it was completely obsolete.
Right, and the compelling evidence for that is the fact that the new purchaser just knocked it down.
Precisely. Quite frankly, these cases are very difficult. I will agree that the courts would be overwhelmed if everybody could just come in and you have a couple of appraisers say, well, you know, it's $10,000 overvalued. No, that's not what this procedure is really for. It's for those cases where there's an exceptional situation. And we think we had an exceptional situation here that just didn't get recognized.
The argument on the other side, though, is, well, this is just a battle of experts. I mean, you're right. I mean, that's your typical, whether it's MedMail or some other tort or this. You had qualified experts who gave their opinions, and the court believed one, not the other.
Well, the only problem is the one expert it believed only used one method, and it was the wrong method. And that's our whole point, is the wrong method was used.
What about the second expert?
Their second expert, Mr. Pierce? Mr. Pierce, number one, didn't give any value at all as to this property. He said it shouldn't even be a warehouse, it should be a commercial property. And if it's going to be a commercial property, you'd have to tear it down. So we think that Mr. Pierce's testimony helped us. He's the one that said, well, it's really not much use, I think was the quote that he gave. And that's their expert. They're independent expert. All of the evidence in this case, and most of it was uncontroverted, because Ms. Dove's report and Ms. Dove testified before Mr. Butt even testified. And Mr. Butt never said what she said was wrong, which is it's an improper method to use the cost method of valuation on a structure this old. It leads to bad results. And that's not only in this case, but a number of cases that have been cited show that. And so we think we had no problem showing that there was bad methodology. And it's overwhelming from that standpoint. And as we pointed out, and I guess the McKee case pointed out, if we show that there's the bad methodology and all three methods were not used, and Mr. Butt verified that not all three methods weren't used. In fact, he suggested, well, we couldn't do the comparison of properties. We couldn't do that because there weren't any like properties in the city of Portsmouth. Well, in the McKee case, they use valuations of properties from very different jurisdictions. I think one was from California. But you don't have to have the comparables be in the city necessarily. And obviously that's why Mr. Corralito was able to come up with valuations of similar properties throughout the Tidewater area that were similar to the Smithfield packing plant in coming up with his valuations. And basically, we think the evidence was basically uncontroverted that the value was in the land, period. And this building had no value. And what better evidence of that is that the new purchaser tore it down.
I just want to return to something, make sure I'm clear on it, that even though a mass appraisal may have been done correctly, I mean, there's no bizarre methodology that was employed. It's done by the accepted standards.
Yes.
A litigant, my impression was that is the case here.
Yes.
And correct me if I'm wrong. But a litigant could come in, and what would that litigant have to show in order to then set aside that mass appraisal, that value that was derived, and then turn it into some kind of contested hearing? What hurdle do they need what would they have to show to clear the hurdle of setting aside the mass appraisal?
Well, I don't know that the mass appraisal value is entitled to the presumption of correctness. That's where the drill down comes.
Okay.
You have to explain the mass appraisal does not utilize any of the three recognized appraisal methods that are acceptable methods as recognized by the professional organizations.
So the presumption doesn't have much value, practically speaking, because my understanding is basically every locality does and must use mass appraisal methods. And so the presumption would be pretty weak then, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Because that's when the drill down comes, when somebody challenges it.
So if they drill down and say, I'm using the three methods, I'm setting aside mass appraisal standards, I'm using the more ordinary or whatever the right word is, different standards.
Yes, sir.
And here's my value. I've done the drill down. That's what gets the presumption of correctness at that point?
Yeah.
Okay. I just want to make sure I understand the sequence, because this case, you know, we in McKee, we didn't have to worry about mass appraisal because of just the way it was done at the front end. And this is moving us a little past that, and so I just want to make sure, as localities are going to want to understand this, those who want to challenge these assessments want to know the right sequence, and so that's why I want to spend a little time on it. So thank you for helping me through that.
Well, and I understand that, and I know there's this somewhat of a division in the circuits about what the effect of the amendment was from 2011, but is our position is that it's always been the question that the magic word is you have to show manifest error. I think the word manifest means something, not just error, but manifest error, and I think that's what's critical. But one way to always have shown that, and now it's incorporated right into the statute, is improper methodology, and we think improper methodology was explicitly shown here. There should be no presumption of correctness.
Right, assuming you can sail past the mass appraisal point.
Yes, and I think we did in this case. And once again, what really cries out is this. We have a property that was assessed for $6,100,000, basically, marketed by Smithfield for $1,009,000, bought for $875,000. Our client tried to sell it for $1,001,000, ended up selling it for $575,000, and the purchaser tore it down. And as to the issue of the attorney's fees, Judge Melvin correctly held that there was no reasonable basis shown for the attorney's fee award.
Well, of course, if you win on your first issue, you don't have to worry about that.
But I understand.
The one thing that puzzled me about that is, it's a contingency, and ordinarily with these attorney's fee cases, it's an hourly basis. And so when you have an hourly type billing, you treat it differently because you're sending the bills to the client and you're explaining everything you're doing. With contingency, it's a different lens. And so wouldn't that affect our analysis if we get to it?
I don't think it should be a contingency fee. It says it should not exceed 20%, but that doesn't mean you can just go charge 20%.
Well, but you did get a haircut from, to whatever it was, 13% or whatever.
We did, Your Honor. I'd like to reserve the rest of my time if I could.
All right.
Thank you.
May it please the court, Jim Kales on behalf of the City of Portsmouth, and with the court's indulgence, I'm going to refer to the City of Portsmouth as the city and the taxpayer as the taxpayer because Portsmouth is in both names. If I cross over and violate my own rule, I apologize. This case, as Mr. Koch has said, is about an assessment for a meatpacking plant that had created up until its deactivation by its then owner, Smithfield Foods, somewhere in the neighborhood of 15,000 hot dogs per day. Up until it closed, it had operated as a meatpacking plant. The property, however, was then purchased by the taxpayer, which then, in a stipulation prepared and submitted to the trial court, admits that it began a practice of essentially gutting the building. They took everything out of the building. And that is shortly after the sale in 2013, then 2014 and 2015 passed without the taxpayer making any payment whatsoever of its tax. It was only when the city began its effort to collect the tax by the correspondence back and forth by counsel retained by the treasurer that the taxpayer moved forward at all with beginning to pay the tax. This is relevant, Your Honor, because what's going on in this case is a challenge by the taxpayer to the value assigned by the city when the taxpayer has done nothing in the record to advise the city of the value of the property at the time it took possession.
Is that some kind of waiver argument you're making, or is that just for the optics of the thing?
It's not really a waiver argument per se, other than, as we pointed out in our brief, that the local ordinance 35-73 in the Portsmouth City Code goes toward a circumstance where a taxpayer believes that their property has no more value, that a structure on their property has no more value, which is precisely...
So, I mean, in other words, that's a fact that can inform the judgment of the court.
Absolutely, Your Honor.
Help me with this sequencing of these cases. So McKee, we had a very unorthodox mass appraisal, and we said the methodology was bizarre, so it has no presumption of correctness. Here, we just heard there's no qualms with a mass appraisal being done the right way. The taxpayer comes and says, look, there's this huge disparity between what the mass appraisal says and what market realities indicate. How would a taxpayer challenge a mass appraisal? Does a taxpayer have to point out a methodological flaw with a mass appraisal, which is different from a more detailed, in-depth appraisal? Can, as your opposing counsel suggests, just bring in an expert to say, that value is completely out of kilter, and then the city has to do a deeper dive and come up with a more detailed answer?
Your Honor, subsection B of 58.1-3984 provides the presumption that's afforded to the local assessment. And it indicates an or situation. There's an or and then there's an and. And it's if the taxpayer proves that it's valued at more than its fair market value or that the assessment is not uniform in its application. As I am reading this, Your Honor, I believe the uniformity in application is meant to deal with the mass appraisal techniques employed by the localities. As Your Honor has observed in the appellant's opening argument, is something that localities across the Commonwealth are using, and is something that they are forced to use just by the nature
and
of...
And the regs and the standards contemplate that that's permissible.
Correct, Your Honor. Correct, Your Honor. It is a proper technique, and it is one that was employed by the City of Portsmouth in this case.
But why should the mass appraisal, which is basically a generalized guess, be given the same magnitude of the presumption of correctness as would a property-specific appraisal? I mean, we're going from basically a guess to a pretty good faith effort of figuring out what the reality is. And here, the guess is badly wrong. It's obviously not worth $6 million, or people be lined up willing to pay $3 million for it this afternoon.
I believe the way the statute is written in 58.1-3984B makes it a statutory issue rather than one where the presumption is somehow borne out by other authority. In other words, a better way to say that, Your Honor, is the General Assembly has given deference to the mass appraisal techniques in its wording in 3984.
Yeah, I'm getting at the weight of that deference.
Your Honor, it is significant because the weight of the deference has to carry the day for appraisals. And
carry the day. There would be no rebuttal case if it carried the day. That's
fair
actually
enough.
Their whole case is they carried the day all the way to midnight, and their rebuttal case is sort of ignored.
Your Honor, the way in which localities have to do this, there are assessors that come and go from every time. It is simply a logistic impossibility for the localities to be able to perform an individual assessment of every property, whether it's commercial, industrial, or residential.
So it's a good starting point. It deserves the presumption of correctness. But when someone comes in and says, look, I have got individualized evidence on this particular piece of property, and it's pretty daggone overwhelming that it's not worth what the mass appraisal general guess says it's worth. Isn't that the way the system should work? You come up with a reasonable default, but you always have exceptions built into it?
Absolutely, Your Honor. It is the way the statute is written, the way the scheme is set up by the General Assembly to address these, contemplates exactly what Your Honor is saying. What we have in this case, Your Honor, however, is a circumstance where the condition of the property was changing over the course of the 3-year window at issue. And the evidence provided by the taxpayer in the Valbridge assessment, I'm sorry, the Valbridge appraisal, deals only with their viewing of it in 2015, the appraiser's viewing of it, Mr. Colorito's viewing of it in 2015. And thereafter, he made what would be called a forensic assessment of or appraisal of the property afterwards. He went back and said it must have been in 2013 and 2014. These conditions existed, and it would have also, in that window of time, also had no value. When drilled down, so to speak, on cross-examination, Mr. Colorito admitted that he had no firsthand knowledge of what the condition of that property was in 2013 and 2014. So the city of Portsmouth took into account the condition of the property by going with the taxpayer to the Board of Equalization. And the Board of Equalization, on the city's recommendation, reduced the assessment to the $3.76 million, with roughly $1 million being the value of the land and the structure being $2.7 million. In 2013, Judge Melvin's opinion and order found that there was not sufficient evidence to say that the building had no value. Part of that, I believe, in the judge's rationale, recognized the evolving condition of the property. That is, as the taxpayer was going into the property and cannibalizing the bones of the building, so to speak, it's not surprising that when Mr. Pierce went to the building after it had been sold and was being prepared for demolition by the new owner, that he found a husk that had to be put into a different use. He was suggesting a commercial use that he thought would be appropriate in these circumstances. He also challenged the comparable findings or the comparable properties that were offered, and ones which Mr. Colorito admitted on the stand, several of them he had used in as many as 50 prior appraisals, but he didn't think as many as 100. What we're talking about with those circumstances is an appraisal that was performed that the judge did not believe carried the weight to get past the showing of a fair market value deficiency or a problem with the uniform application. The evidence in this case, in terms of the presumption afforded under 3984B, they have presented evidence that went to fair market value. We do not believe that they have presented any evidence whatsoever that would say that the assessment was not uniform. The mass appraisal techniques were employed by the city. Mr. Butt indicated in his testimony, which is found at Joint Appendix 318 and 319, that the city did, in fact, use mass appraisal techniques and that those mass appraisal techniques took into account all three forms of appraisal. They took into account the cost method, the sales method, as well as the rent method. They used and considered all three of the approaches. To the extent that we have an issue in this case where McKee Foods was handed down during the middle of the briefing. So it is interesting to have a case that you think goes one way and then you end up on a different horse as you're riding toward the next stop on the corral, so it's out, Pony Express, whatever. You end up with a situation where McKee Foods, if you drill to it, I don't believe governs this case. In the 2013 assessment, Judge Melvin found that there wasn't sufficient evidence to find that the building had no value. So they do not even meet the first uniform.
And when the assessment is, it's not a sort of hindsight thing, right? I mean, it's at the time of that particular year. So in other words, reasonable appraisers may look at something at a house, for example, and say, oh yeah, this is a very desirable property. Well, in hindsight, 10 years later, turns out nobody wanted it, or for whatever reason, the sale just dragged on and on. But looking at it from a sort of forward lens at the time, it's different than backwards in hindsight saying, oh, well, there's a problem.
Yes, Your Honor. What was done was Mr. Colorito opined that in 2013 the building had no value, and Judge Melvin could not find, based on the evidence, and the evolution of the property by virtue of the deconstruction of it by the taxpayer as part of its business model. I mean, they go into these properties, they take them apart and leave a shell and try to sell it for whatever they can. There's no question that in 2013, Judge Melvin did not find that they proved their fair market appraisal was sufficient to rebut what the city had done. So I don't believe they get to the issues with respect to whether or not...
And is that because maybe some other meat packer was going to come in, or they were going to retrofit it and turn it into offices or condos or something? I mean, what are they going to do with this 44-year-old building that Smithfield says, we don't want it?
It's unclear what property what the property was going to be used for. At the time the assessment was performed in 2013, at the time the assessed value was put to it, Smithfield Foods in 2012 had not challenged its assessment. In the years before that, Smithfield Foods conceded that the assessment, by virtue of the fact that they did not file a petition under 58.1-3984, conceded that the assessment...
Or at least that's an inference a fact finder could take into account.
Yes, and I believe that's what Judge Melvin did do. And I believe he specifically referenced the absence of any challenge by Smithfield Foods in its, or in his opinion and order disposing of the case at the circuit court level. With respect to the attorney's fees, I do believe that a contingency award of attorney's fees is appropriate. The city...
And that's, in with debt collection, that's how it's routinely handled.
Yes, Your Honor.
And often higher than 20%. I mean, I don't have any knowledge of this tax area, but I know in other debt collection contexts, a third is not unusual.
Yes, Your Honor, and that is something that we submit. The 20% charge by Mr. Barkley on behalf of the treasurer was perfectly appropriate. He got a spectacular result for the city of Portsmouth in that he was able to recoup all of the tax that the city believed it had been owed. To the extent that there were issues involved in the case, I do want to refer to the issue that there was a promissory note executed by the taxpayer indicating that it would pay the tax, and the tax at the time that promissory note was executed by the taxpayer to the benefit of the treasurer and the city of Portsmouth. The tax at issue was the tax that was due on the assessed values, over $200,000, Your Honor. So to the extent that Mr. Barkley was successful in recovering the amount sought, he earned the 20% and certainly the 13%. My time is very close to expiring, so thank you.
Your button. Just briefly, I keep hearing, and we kept hearing, and I've read in the brief, that somehow my client stripped this property. That's not what happened. All of the property on the assessment card that was in the file was there in 2015, as was there in 2012, 2013. We didn't sell any of the property that was included and determined for the assessment, period. Thank you all.
Call the next case.